Do the next right thing to make your marriage sing.
All I ever wanted was to be in love with you. When your eyes met mine, I knew that this was really true.
Hello and welcome to The Music of Marriage
with Bob and
Evie. We are here again with Daryl, our producer, faithfully making sure the sound works and things like that.
Yes.
So we are continuing on a series called The Four Loves, because in the Greek there are really four words for four meanings of love when you go back to the root beginnings of language when words were created.
Mm-hmm.
So The Four Loves is a C.S. Lewis concept, and it's extremely helpful to break down and kind of divide and conquer.
That's actually a Greek concept, but C.S. Lewis just expounded on it.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, in studying how marriage is helped by the different aspects of what love is, it really enlightens you when you're in your everyday life to realize, oh, the feelings are gone. That doesn't mean love is gone. It doesn't mean marriage is over. There are so many components and angles of it. So today our focus is on the Greek word of love, which means eros, which I'm sure you've probably heard of before, which is the physical, sexual desire, love part of marriage. And C.S. Lewis, we're going to lift a lot of concepts from him because he's so brilliant. And so we've been studying a lot and listening a lot to, and you can too, the YouTube videos, just, you know, speak in your little remote there. C.S. Lewis, Christian Marriage, and there's another one, The Four Loves, and then others will come up that you'll see, and they're not that long. But wow, you'll walk away and say, oh, maybe my marriage isn't over after all.
Yeah.
Maybe this is just the beginning of understanding more.
Yeah, and actually his talk on marriage is right from his book, Mere Christianity, which was very instrumental in leading me to my own personal faith in Christ. It's really proof of the existence and verity of Christianity, and it's irrefutable, basically. So he has a magical way of building arguments so that he doesn't just tell you what is right, he proves what is right, and then you can draw your own conclusion from there. But anyways, it's an excellent book for anyone who is searching in their faith and really wants to make sense of Christianity and all the different forms out there and what's true, what's not true. And Christianity, of course, compared to other religions or no religion at all. And it's wonderful. Great book.
C.S. Lewis wrote the Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, that whole series. He was like a thinker, well-known, very famous thinker and writer, fiction writer. And
a friend of J.R.R. Tolkien's, actually.
Yeah, who wrote Lord of the Rings. So yeah, if you've seen the Lord of the Rings movie, which you probably have, that's the same kind of brilliant minds and creative minds. So, jumping in, but I wanted to say, too, The Music of Marriage, we have a website called themusicofmarriage.com, and we have a book, How to Make Your Marriage Sing, that you can order there. It's on Amazon. And
you don't have to have perfect pitch to make your marriage sing. Either. Someone said that to us once. Well, my husband doesn't have perfect pitch. He doesn't know how to sing a note. I said, well, it's not about your voice, it's about It's about how marriage actually works, you know, how God will help you make your marriage sing, right?
Yep. So anyway, you can get our book there, How to Make Your Marriage Sing. It's 5 biblical dynamics to keep the music playing, which is 5 of really many, but we just tried to use that as guideposts for basic concepts. So anyway, we're going to jump into this Christian marriage as in the physical aspect of it, which today is challenging because laws have changed. I think it was in 1974 that they passed the no-fault divorce law. Before that, because of understanding the societal burden and the psychological and emotional burden civilization suffers when there's divorce. In fact, Rome, which was great, like, you know, America, make America great, whatever, our country has been so blessed. Rome was very sophisticated, and even the Greeks, but they, you would be surprised at how far they had come along in even their so-called technology of the day. Brilliant civilization, very advanced. But when they started breaking down, the breakdown of the family, and divorce was so rampant, it became to kind of like what we're seeing, I think, in our country today. You see so many loose personal renditions of what people want marriage and relationships and love and sex to be. It's kind of like whatever turns you on, whatever, you know, if you're not with the one you love, love the one you're with, whatever. A lot of loose, I'll do it my way concepts. And though it's all supposed to be good and fun, but there is a context in which you are stabilized as a person and your marriage is stabilized, your family is stabilized, your community is stabilized, and your nation is stabilized. Because we as a nation are only as good as the individuals are, as well as we behave and support one another, are true to one another, are just, are charitable. And the different loves, basic laws, C.S. Lewis was saying this too, that justice, charity, etc., those have to come to bear in marriage as well. So whatever we do with anything, including this part of marriage, thinking of fairness, of kindness, of charity, is kind of supersedes all of the loves that we experience or that we work out in our marriage.
And we'll get into explaining the relationship between justice and charity in marriage. Most people don't think about the word justice relating to marriage, but we'll talk about that in this broadcast. But, you know, the idea of Christian marriage is based on Christ's words that a man and woman are to be regarded as a single organism, the meaning of one flesh in the English language. And when he said this, he was not expressing a sentiment, but stating a fact.
So the man and the woman are, based on Christ's words in marriage, to be regarded as a single organism. So now you have people, well, I'm going to have my own bank account, just in case, you know. It's like we're going to be married, but, you know, we had in the 70s where some women would say, well, I'm going to keep my last name even though we're married. And the concept of man and woman in marriage as a single organism was more eroded, you know, by new trends like that. I think that's an important concept to meditate on.
Yeah, it's just like a lock and a key are one mechanism. Lewis made these analogies. Or a violin and a bow are one instrument. So the inventor of the human machine was telling us that its two halves, the male and the female. And they were made to combine together in pairs, not simply on a sexual level, but totally combined. So, and those who isolate the sexual component and or who indulge in it apart from or outside of marriage are trying to isolate one kind of union, which is a sexual union, from all other kinds of union, and which were intended to go along with the makeup of the total union. The Christian attitude toward sex does not mean there's anything wrong with sexual pleasure, obviously, in marriage, in any more than there's anything wrong with the pleasure of eating. So it means that you must not isolate that pleasure or try to get it by itself any more than you should try to get pleasures of taste without swallowing and digesting and just chewing things and spitting them out. So,
yeah, that's often how people feel, actually, when they engage in sex without that full, total commitment and union of marriage. It's like what he said. It's like you're gonna eat food, chew it up, and spit it out, but you're not gonna digest it and make it part of you. You're not going to. It's just like this instant, this pleasure. Boop, done. Done with, you know, move on. And it doesn't make any sense, really. That kind of demonstrates the self-centeredness, and that is a problem, because sex was made to be within marriage and not outside of it. And of course, we all know that idea has been mocked a lot, but I think probably most people, maybe there's a moral majority out there, don't mock it, or they know better. But
yeah,
there is a definite enticement to ignore that, and just and now we have all kinds of ways you can indulge in that without the commitment of marriage. You know, let's live together, let's use the pill, whatever. So there's a lot of ways in last 50 years or so where people have come up with to, you know, chew their food and just spit it out, basically, when it comes to relationships, you know.
Or trade partners, like going to a different diner, you know. It's gotten to be that bad. But when it comes to marriage, it's always good to get back to the essentials, even to understand what place. I mean, obviously, most people know what place, you know, sex has in marriage. They know what place love has in marriage, but they don't know where things can go wrong is thinking that those things are the basis of marriage. We know, we talked about before, that a covenant is a basis of marriage, the covenant that God made with a man and a woman when they decide to get married. And for the Christian, God puts a portion of his spirit in that man and woman, making that union solid and one. But, you know, Christianity teaches most basically that marriage is for life, okay? And the importance of keeping promises is embedded in our vows. So besides chastity as a virtue for marriage, justice is the other virtue for consideration, because justice includes the keeping of promises. That's where that fits in.
Isn't that interesting, that justice in marriage, you don't think of that when you give it your vows. You say, oh, I'll keep my promises, but you don't think of that as a type of justice. How
right.
would you say that is something we should keep in mind when we're thinking about marriage vows or thinking about keeping our marriage vows?
Well, it's like, you know, honoring a contract. You know, justice is, if you break a contract in a business agreement, for instance, well, that's unjust. And so, same thing with marriage. And if you break a marriage in a way that God doesn't validate, you're breaking a contract with God as well as with your spouse. So the whole idea of justice is embedded in the keeping of promises based on a covenant, and a covenant is like a contract. Covenant is a spiritual thing. We're not talking about the piece of paper that you're given when you get married. Because a lot of people say, and I've heard them say this, well, marriage is just a piece of paper anyway. I mean, you could just tear it up and you're done. Well, no, it's a lot more than that.
Well, if everyone who's been married in a church has made a promise to stick with their spouse till his or her death, and the duty of keeping that promise has no special connection with sexual morality, it is in the same position as any other promise. In other words, love or sex is not the basis of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
The promise made in church was a mere formality, or let's put it this way, was that promise that we made in church a mere formality, never intended to be kept?
Mm-hmm.
Do we want just the respectability that comes with being married without having to pay the price?
Yeah.
Or do we want, well, okay, I'll marry you, but, you know, I've got the back door open, you know. Mm-hmm. I've got you in my hip pocket, as Barney says about Thelma Lou, but
yeah.
I've got, but I can,
that
I can
the
play
that
the
relationship
field,
for a while.
But at the same time, like Andy points out, yeah, well, you know, you've got, what's her name, Juanita there. What about Juanita? Well, you know, anyway, so being, being faithful and true, you know, that's a promise that we make, and that is being just and fair. And who would wish the high honor of chastity to people who have no intention of keeping their promises, but are just putting on a show, fooling everybody at the wedding? But their thoughts are really, well, you know, we'll see. Mm-hmm. Maybe five years. We'll see how long it lasts.
Yeah.
That means they really weren't serious about keeping their vows till death do us part. And, you know, so you have to stick to the promise if you make it. Otherwise, don't make it mm-hmm. and think you're fooling everybody. But, you know, we are all easily, you know, we're all caught up in the issues of life once we get married. And it's very easy to kind of forget that we made that promise, the meaning of it.
Yeah, and there are those who think that they can just bypass marriage, at least for a while, by living together, and to avoid a lot of the problems inherent in marriage. And so what they really want, though, is they want all the benefits of marriage without the hard work of marriage and the commitment of marriage, because marriage is no doubt based on a commitment. It's not like you're dating anymore, which is if you're dating, it's so important to understand that if you decide to take that step, you're making an irrevocable commitment. And there are very few exceptions in Scripture that allow you to break it. But
if you're dating, you're making an irrevocable commitment?
If you decide to take that next step.
Of
getting married.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, you can break your dating commitment. In fact, my son's best friend just called, his girlfriend, I think, called off the wedding just before, the day before or something like that, or a week before the wedding.
They were going to go to Italy. And
yeah.
Interestingly, Italy just had about 35 towns slide underwater. And so they have some big, so I say, well, maybe God was trying to keep people safe. I don't know. But, yeah, it's just an aspect of marriage that is important to meditate on, that, you know, when we make those vows, they're not based on the love and sex part and that mm-hmm. kind of attraction part. Because think about it. I've sometimes thought about that. What if I got in an accident, my face was burned off, or what if or something, one of us was maimed, or, you know, we weren't like all, it was like really not attractive for whatever mm-hmm. reason. or became sick, you know. We say that in sickness and in health. But at the time, we think, well, everything's just going to stay in this glorious state. You know, what could go wrong?
Of being in love. Yeah,
but,
and that's kind of...
You know, it's like a friend of mine, Anna, she's 80 years old, and I have to get her on and talk about marriage at some point. But she said, you know, it wasn't until I got sick that he really stepped up and showed me how much he loved me, because he wasn't one, you know, there wasn't a lot of, in fact, there were difficulties over the years.
Yeah.
But she said, it took me getting sick. Well, that was in the vows, so I guess, and things have been much better. So.
We have a song right now from Jim Reeves called I Love You Because.
I love you because you understand, dear, every single thing I try to do. You're always there to lend a helping hand, dear. I love you most of all because you're you. No matter what the world may say about me, I know your love will always see me through. I love you for the way you never doubt me, but most of all I love you 'cause you're you. I love you because my heart is lighter every time I'm walking by your side. I love you because the future's brighter, the door to happiness you open wide. No matter what the world say about me, I know your love will always see me through. I love you for 100,000 reasons, but most of all I love you 'cause you're you.
We're back with The Music of Marriage with Bob and Evie, and talking about love in marriage, and eros, which is the Greek word for the sexual relationship between man and woman, and the idea that being in love, if that's the only reason why you're remaining married, that doesn't leave a whole lot of room for a promise or a contract. So if love is the whole thing, the promise really doesn't add anything, okay? If the promise adds nothing, then it shouldn't be made. So we're getting down to the basics of when you get married and you make promises in your vows. Those vows mean something, and they mean something forever. Okay, they mean forever. That's Christian marriage. It's till death do us part, and no matter and everything else in between. So, but the curious thing that lovers themselves say is G.K. Chesterton pointed out, those who are in love have a natural inclination to bind themselves by promises. In other words, those who know what love is and express it, not only express it, but act it out. And you hear this in love songs. You know, the world is full of vows of eternal constancy in love songs. But the Christian law behind this is not forcing upon the passion of love something that's foreign to that passion or our own nature. Rather, the Christian law is demanding that lovers should take seriously, take marriage seriously, take their commitments seriously, and take that which their passions impel them to do. Which is what? What do our passions impel us to do, Evelyn?
You would know.
You would know.
You're on a roll, Bob.
The promise, okay. they impel us to do this. The promise is made when I'm in love, and because I'm in love, to be true to the beloved as long as I live. That's essentially it. And that commits me to being true even if I cease to be in love, okay? The promise must be about things I can do, actions. And, why? Well, no one can promise to go on feeling a certain way, right?
I never promised you a rose garden. Who sang that song? Lynn Anderson?
Yeah.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden.
Yeah, no kidding.
I didn't tell you about the thorns.
Yeah, that's good to watch out for.
But the point is that, you know, we all know you're in love. You're quote-unquote in love. So there's a difference between feeling in love, which is an understandable way to express it, okay? So we know that you don't fall in love. Love is action-based. It's thought-based. It's commitment-based. Because we all know that we're not going to ride through life on the same feelings that we have on our wedding day.
Yeah.
Forever, right? Life comes, kids come, and so what do we have underneath all of that, supporting that? But it's interesting how C.S. Lewis points out that it's part of our nature to make promises when we're in love. You know, how many tree trunks have you seen with hearts carved in them with initials, you know, E.S. and Bob, Evie and Bob, or whoever you are, John and Mary. And what is the thought? What's the feeling when someone's doing that? You know, sometimes you see it in bathroom stalls, you know, scratched in with, I don't know what they scratch it in there with, some sharp, maybe a pen, I don't know what, but anyway.
You shouldn't do it, those things.
And again, it's the songs. I mean, we know, obviously, that's why we relate to so many of the songs, and we enjoy so many of the love songs, because we can relate to that intense, and who doesn't like feeling in love and feeling loved? It kind of lifts you way above the mundaneness of everyday life. So and the goal of marriage isn't to stay on that plane forever and ever, but I think it is to try to encourage that aspect of marriage, along with all the other things, and not to think, well, it's over because I don't feel this way, or I feel the opposite of that way for a time.
Yeah, and one thing that really helps the feeling part of it, even though we're not talking about feelings as being reliable or the basis for anything lasting, we're talking about them only in relation to a benefit. And that is, you know, feelings come with action, love in action. In other words, when you treat your spouse with kindness, gentleness, goodness, you know. When you have self-control, when you're, you know, when you're provoked, yeah, and things like that, when you're showing deference to them. That, I mean, that's all love in action, and when you do that, that inspires the feelings of love, and it also propels the other aspect, the sexual union. And a lot of people say, well, we don't even have a sex life. Well, what are you doing in your marriage to encourage that? Are you just saying, I need more, you know what? No, that's not what it takes. The feelings have to be there first. So if you're going to treat your wife harshly, gentlemen, don't expect her to be too responsive, okay? That's the way that works. And that's really the place of respecting and understanding a woman's feelings in marriage and how that relates to the completeness of your union. Is that right? Do I got that right, Evelyn?
It's fascinating listening to
you. I mean, I'm speaking as a man, but, you know, I do have a little experience.
Well, I think we all know in relationships, you know, how can we interrupt, what things do we do that interrupt, you know, the flow of love or the feelings of love between us and other people and between us and our spouse? And it's amazing how as soon as you, one technique that we've talked about this before that I've tried lately and I'm amazed at what happens is praying for your enemies, because Jesus says to pray for your enemies and to do good those who treat you. So, okay, it doesn't sound really right to say, well, my husband is enemy number one right now, or this person or that person. I can think of people on one hand that really right now are, when I just think of them, I get very agitated feeling or dislike feeling.
He could be your neighbor, though.
That's right.
And you're still
love your neighbor as yourself. So you're really trapped. So I decided recently, you know, I even politically, when I think, oh man, that guy, that person, that, why are they even there? And I think, well, maybe I should just pray for them. Maybe I should pray for fill in the blank, like, oh, that's so hard. How can I even mention their name? But I will do it. And I will try to get my head around that, you know, that's what we can contribute to improve the status of our world, of our marriage, of any relationship, mother-in-law, whoever it is. And I think that, I often think when I'm doing house cleaning, it's easy to run around with the vacuum and get the middle parts that everybody sees, but getting on your hands and knees and getting in the crevices and digging out that junk between the stove and the counter or whatever it is. I think about life and relationships, like those are the ones you just want to like not look at, like who's going to walk in your house and look it there anyway that closely. But when you pay attention to that, it's like you just, everything feels different when you walk into the room. And I know that because when Daryl cleans this studio here, you know, you can just feel the clean when you walk in right now.
When's the last time you cleaned the studio, Daryl?
It's kind of a dumb woman joke, woman thing, but.
Just when I thought I couldn't squirm anymore in the pew.
Sorry. We're really laying it on thick today.
She's the white glove lady, you know.
No, I'm not always, but I think
you're Dutch, you know. Dutch are the cleanly ones. You should see the windows in Holland. They are spotless, and the sidewalks and everything.
Yeah, they wash their windows, like, all day long. But anyway, it's that way where, okay, I'm going to get down and stick my nose into the hardest, yuckiest relationship situations in my life, my enemies, if you will, and I'm going to pray for these people. And my feelings aren't in it necessarily, but my head is in it, because I'm going to trust that when God says, you know, try it, you'll like it, you know, just do it. and see what'll happen. And then lo and behold, you know, I get a phone call and somebody says, hey, guess what some so-and-so said? I'm thinking, that's weird. I was just praying for them, you know. Mm-hmm. I was just praying for that horrid situation and that difficult person who you just forget it, their lost cause, you know. But see, God's in the business of making all things new and beautiful. Mm-hmm. And so we have to keep our eye on that fact. And that's what he's good for. That's what he's, that sounds kind of cheesy to say that, but that's what, that's who he is. That's why he came. He came to save and to replace junk with stuff that we really like and to make us really happy and, of course, holier. But, you know, that sounds, no, and our happiness comes from trusting him and obeying him. So it's so simple and childlike, really. And as soon as we do that with everything, the most, especially with the most difficult, hard to reach areas of our life, those junky hidden parts that most people won't see, that's where then you really have the beginnings of a lot of new and awesome things.
And that's when your world expands with one another. And we have a song now from Skeeter Davis called The End of the World.
Why does the sun go on shining? Why does the sea rush to shore? My heart go on beating. Why do these eyes of mine cry?
We're back with the music of marriage with Bob and Evie. And again, we have a book called How to Make Your Marriage Sing, and actually original music that you can download on our website called themusicofmarriage.com.
Yes.
So in talking about this aspect of love, which, you know, has different meanings, the word love in the root Greek words and so forth, and this one about the physical sexual attraction part of it is what we've been talking about, and how to kind of get a little more insight and grip on how that is to be thought of, especially in relation to, you know, our feelings versus our promises mm-hmm. and our commitments and the covenant that we made. So I guess the question to ask is, what is the use of keeping two people together if they are no longer in love? And C.S. Lewis, again, is a lot of our inspiration for today.
That's a good question, too.
So what do you think is the answer to that one, Bob? Why stay together if you're not in love anymore? What have I heard people say? There's nothing there.
Yeah.
Well, your vow is still there, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, there's
but
several
feelings-based.
Sound social reasons. One is, you know, to provide a home for your children. If you have children, and if you're married, it's a good thing to have children. Believe us, we had four, and they are wonderful and have expanded our life exponentially. Besides,
including
God,
the grandchildren.
God says to be fruitful and multiply, right? So, you know, it's a good thing. And I think another social reason is to protect the woman who could have sacrificed her career to raise a family. Or just to be married.
What do you mean by protecting the woman who sacrificed her career to get married, to stay home and raise kids?
Well, like you did, you didn't go out to get a job, and you always were quite annoyed when
that
people say, "Do
career.
You work?"
My career, it is a career to raise a family. I don't know when that fell off the edge of the world, the end of the world.
Oh, you need all the career skills that any solid resume would afford.
That's for
to be
sure.
To be a mother and a wife, I'm telling you. But the other is to be a model.
I did modeling. I did. I was a wedding gown model after our fourth child.
That's appropriate.
So I was a model mother.
Yes. No, but to be a model for those, for others, of those who keep promises and who are faithful and who endure despite feelings, despite whether love is strong or weak, despite physical conditions that put a strain on your marriage.
Despite your sex life.
Yeah.
Despite how good they look or don't look anymore.
Despite your finances.
Endurance.
Yes.
So that is one good use of keeping two people together who supposedly are no longer in love, which in a way, there is no such thing as no longer being in love is kind of a man-made concept because you either love or you don't love. Being in love describes an emotional state of mind. And that mm-hmm. and feeling, and that's about all that it describes. And that is an aspect of the bigger picture, like we were saying, because the union of marriage it combines everything, not just that one thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like eating food, you know, your favorite steak. You don't chew it and go, "Wow, this is the best steak ever," and then spit it out. "Ooh, these mashed potatoes are the best ever," and then spit it out. No, you ingest it into your body and it becomes part of you like one, you know, and you benefit from the nutrients and you really enjoy the taste of it. And that's kind of a good way to look at this idea of marriage, as where the two people are one organism, and that you don't single out one aspect like sex or your feelings
mm-hmm.
and say, well, because that's not there or it's not what I like it to be, or I could get it better somewhere else or something, I'm just going to drift away from this person in my mind or in reality, you know.
Mm-hmm. Or if you expect to feel the same way you did when you got married 50 years ago, like the old fairy tale ending, they lived happily ever after.
So, in other words, endurance is something that requires accepting the reality that that's going to come to you in your marriage,
mm-hmm.
and don't accept it with a "wow, I got the short of this end of the stick" kind of attitude. And it's so immediate that we react that way. You know, whatever, we lose our job, we're in the dumps. We things go south in our marriage for whatever reason, we're in the dumps. And what we have found to be true, and people the world over have found it to be true historically, biblically, it's true. And that is that when you're at the bottom, I mean, look at Joseph. He was thrown into a pit. Talk about being in the pits. Mm-hmm. He was thrown into a pit by his brothers who were jealous of him. So, but God pulled him out of that pit and put him on the pinnacle So whatever your situation is, when it feels like the bottom's dropped out and your feelings aren't there, your sex life's screwed up, your you know, all the things that would attract you, all those high highs that you get, that you feel when you first married, you have to understand that marriage and your oneness comprises so many other aspects of life, and you endure through those. And that's the model. That's what we're supposed to try to model.
And the most dangerous thing you can do is to take any one impulse of your own nature and set it up as a thing you ought to follow at all costs. You know, being in love is a good thing. It's not the best thing, though. There are many things last, but feelings come and go. You know, and the other aspect of, you know, we hear people who say that they're just not in love anymore. Well, you know, ceasing to be in love doesn't mean you have to cease to love. Okay.
It doesn't mean love is gone.
No, or that you have
just
to
don't feel.
Or you have to stop loving the person. You know, so being in love is one state of affairs. Loving is another thing that we're always commanded to do regardless of our state of affairs. And so love, as distinct from being in love, is not a mere feeling, right? It's a deep unity. This is what C.S. Lewis says. It's a deep unity maintained by the will and deliberately strengthened by habit, reinforced by, in Christian marriage, that is, the grace which both partners ask and receive from God. Okay, they can have this love for each other, even at those moments when they don't like each other. Now that's profound. So as you love yourself, at those moments when you don't like yourself, it's just like that. You can, in other words, everybody loves themselves, but there are moments when you don't like yourself, right? So there's moments when you don't like your spouse, but you still love your spouse. And if you don't like your spouse, get over it. You got to like her. Okay, and him.
Well,
right?
You have to love them. I've heard this saying, you don't have to like someone, but you are commanded to love them. And usually when you do loving things or straighten your attitude out toward the person, like praying for your enemies is like the ultimate hardship to do. When you're not feeling it for somebody, then God just, it's like this flood rushes in of power from God. He just wants to overtake and overcome those things with good, and circumstances change. I often would, at times when I felt like I can't tell Bob again what I want him to do. I know if I tell him, he won't like being told. So I'll just pray, God, make him decide to do this. Make him decide to do that. And lo and behold, he comes up, well, I think I've decided to do this or that. I'm like, yes, you know.
And there are other times when you know, there was one time in particular I remember when you said something I'll never forget, because I was really happened to be busy for like working two shifts or something, you know, and in kind of in my own world for a while there, and not, you know, we're ships passing in the night, and you know, rather than say, you know, you don't have any time for me, you don't show any love for me, we don't go on dates, you know, you're too busy. Rather than saying that, she said something very very sweet and profound.
I do that once in a while on a rare occasion.
Yes, you do. And she said, darling, you're my only source of romance. Well, that brings me to tears, but I'll never forget that, you know. And it reminds me of what Lewis says here, that, you know, being in love first moved us to promise fidelity. But this quieter love, this love that we show through expression and through actions, enables us to keep the promise. It's like, it's on this, that this love, this kind of love, that the engine of marriage is run. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so the music of marriage, you keep the music playing, you know, just think about the old record players that we used to use all the time. It's a very visible kind of a picture of all the components. There are many components needed to keep music playing, right? Mm-hmm. Now here in the digital age, we have Daryl, our invisible producer there, turning the knobs and dials and getting all the music set up. And so we if we only think of it as how we feel, we all know that we're going to miss all the other 99% of what is real. Mm-hmm. And that rhymed. That was almost like a song. If we go only by what we feel, we'll forget what is real. Yes, a lot of what's real. But
you have a lot of good
in
song
the meantime,
ideas.
We can just make the world go away. Forget all your problems.
Sometimes you have to make the world go away, and that's what Eddie Arnold was getting at in this song called.
Why?
Make
what
the
do
world
you mean we
away.
Have? Sometimes you have to make the world go away.
Well, like what happened to me in that illustration, when the world was getting too much of my time and attention, demanding too much of it, and I allowed it to sap my time and attention from you. But
the other thing is,
you're on a bedrock, and so you didn't say, well, I'll see you later, pal, you know.
Yeah, and right. There are seasons of life like that, though, where we have to be patient and understanding. There are periods in life where, you know, okay, for a period of time, he's got to work two jobs. We committed, we're going to get out of debt. So that means my husband is just not, but you can still stay connected. See, the key is to stay connected.
It is.
And to stay connected by that commitment in your mind and in your heart. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you do that. You just make the world go away. You have to do that at times, too, to stay connected. You can't have too much separation and ongoing physical disconnection or emotional disconnection, obviously. So Eddie Arnold nailed it, right? With Make the World Go Away.
Make the world go away and get off my shoulders. Say the things you used to say and make the world go away. Do you remember when you loved me before the world took me astray? If you do, then forgive me and make the world go away. I'm I'm sorry if I hurt you. I'll make it up day by day. Just say you love me like you used to, and make the world go away.